so we're in, right? So the listeners can hear us, or we haven't done the clap yet. Let's do the clap.
All right. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Okay. So listeners, we see like a countdown. Does it start on 5? I can't remember.
Yeah, 5.
Okay, because at that point, my vision goes blurry and I start to panic and have a freak out. Just like we did. But it goes 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and then we're in. And every time that kicks in, my brain is saying, oh my God, what are we gonna talk about? Have we planned anything? Even though we have.
It's crazy though. We just were on this platform that you and I record the podcast on for the last 15 minutes talking. And we were catching up and everything. And then I say, all right, let's do this. And then that's the moment. Same thing. As soon as the countdown comes on, I'm like, oh my God. We should have spent that 15 minutes talking about what we were going to talk about. But maybe that's what makes the podcast just so free and chill. Speaking of the podcast, everyone, welcome into episode 157. Wow. If you've never listened to this podcast before, it's a drumming podcast hosted by two professional drummers that are also creators. And we do our best to let you inside the mental aspect of all of this and all of the emotional roller coasters that Eddie and I both go on every day and that all creators go on. And we do our best to pass on tips to you as far as how to get better at your craft, how to get better at handling the mental side of things. And most importantly, we just try to be your friends and hang out with you for the hour. So
yeah,
let's
man.
Get into it.
And mate, talking about being friends, we've voice noted a couple of times about the last week or so. You just got back from an amazing trip, it looks like.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a good thing to chat about with the listeners too, is what that trip was. Basically, I'm really fortunate. And I think a lot of Europe is this way, as far as you can live anywhere, but you're 2 hours from something amazing, no matter where you live.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how California is. No matter where you live, you're 2 hours from something incredible. So I'm 2 hours from San Francisco. If I want to get that city vibe going, I'm 2 hours from Lake Tahoe, hour and a half from Yosemite. I'm about 3 hours from the Central Coast, which is basically Carmel, Big Sur, Highway 1. It's a really famous highway that just goes along the coast. And so you have these giant green mountains on one side of you, and then you have the ocean on the other side of you. And it's a one-lane road for like 100 miles, and it's just incredible and breathtaking. And basically I have the 2024 camp season coming up, and I just needed to kind of sort it all out in my head. And I was telling Amber that I was a bit stressed, and she, being the amazing wife that she is, she was like, why don't you just go take a 2-day vacation? And I was like, you know, I can't do that. Like, vacations are just not part of being a solopreneur. Like, if you work for yourself, vacation, you just know vacations are out. We don't get that.
Yeah. And even if you did, you'd be stressed the whole time about like not making, like doing things.
Exactly. Work is our vacation. Work is our grind. It's everything. So, but I could tell that I could be more productive by taking some time off. The tough thing is I've never ever, besides I guess clinic tours and stuff, but I've never chosen to take some time off without my family. It's always Amber and the dogs. Mm-hmm. And so this was doing it by myself just to clear my head. So yeah, so it was really fun. I basically, there's a little town called Carmel that Amber and I stay in a lot. And so I'm really familiar with that. So I just chose for that to be where my hotel was. But every morning I'd wake up and I would just drive. And that was it. No plan, no idea where I was going to go. And no time, literally for the first time since I was like, I don't know, 14 years old, the only time constraint was the sun, which was rad. I never once looked at my watch. I literally looked up and I was like, okay, I probably have about another hour of daylight. I'm going to keep driving. And then I would go like, oh, I'm hungry. I don't know if it's 6 p.m. or 9 p.m. or 3 in the afternoon. I just need to find something to eat because I'm hungry. And it was like, it was really pretty neat to like just take that time. And so the reason why I bring it up as far as the listeners, I think if you can, whether it's a weekend trip or whatever, just getting away from your thing, especially your craft, will help your craft so much. The being here at the studio, and I don't know if you go through the same thing there, but being here at the studio is so distracting sometimes, because if I'm around cameras and drums, I feel like I have to do something and I can't think. I can't ever just step back and like see the big picture, because all the details are right there in front of my face. And this was a chance to be like, no sticks, no pad, no drums, no, the only camera I took was a photography camera, and I just took pictures. I didn't take any videos. And yeah, it was really cool, man. I went to state parks. The hell's a state? I've never gone to a state park. I don't even know. Like, well, okay. So check this out. This is so you and me in real life. I pull into Montero State Park or whatever, just because I saw the sign. I was driving on the highway and it said Montero State Park. And I was like, took off down the exit. And I pay my little fee to park. And then I realize I'm just in a parking lot, a dirt parking lot. I don't know what to do. I don't know anything about parks and national parks and state parks. So I go back to the guy. I'm like, hey, man, odd question, but if I just wanted to see something inspiring and pretty, where would I go? And I swear to God, he looks me up and down in my jeans and in my tennies, and he's like, well, you would love to go see the ocean, but you'd have to go through about 2 feet of water to get there. So I'm guessing you don't want to do that. And I was like, okay. I was like, all right, Ranger Rick.
Yeah, there we go.
He's like, pretty boy, if I was you, I'd take a left and go find some redwoods. And so, he was like, about 3 miles that way, you're going to see some of the most inspiring trees you've ever seen. And I was like, 3 miles. Okay. That's a jaunt.
That's a walk.
Yeah. I'm not running this thing. I'm not jogging. It's going to take 2 hours. But I did. And it was amazing. And like I said, I just found myself in, like, you know, he would say things that I'm not a nature guy. I appreciate it, but I don't know anything. He's like, all right, when you get to the grove of eucalyptus trees, take a left and then you'll find an old cabin. And I'm like, the grove? Like, I don't know what that means, man.
Yeah, we're not in the Lord of the Rings, mate. What are you on about?
Come on.
At sunset, you will reach the grove of the lawn mowers.
Totally. And I was like, what? So, but anyways, long story short, it was incredible. If you guys follow me on Instagram, you saw the pictures. It was very just, it was good, man. It was a good chance to connect. But the big picture part is the fact that I was able to zoom out and experience the camps fresh again and think, like, okay, if I was coming to this camp from a foreign country, I'd never met, you know, Mike in person, I'd never jammed with another drummer, I'd never been around a bunch of drummers, I'm coming to California for my first time, what would I want out of this experience besides education? And that's kind of what I was working on in my head.
Yeah, nice, man. I mean, mate, it's all about the bubble, isn't it? Like, we're so in the bubble of everything we do, whether, you know, you're a doctor or a dentist or a teacher or a drummer or in a band. Like, you're just, you wake up and it's just like one foot in front of the next, completing the tasks whilst thinking about the bigger picture, but not really. And it's like a tornado of emotions and feelings and thoughts the whole time, I think, when you run your own business, whatever it may be. And I think,
and you think that everyone goes through it. You think everyone knows, well, they already know,
yeah.
You know, and it's like, no, they don't. No one knows what it's like to load in to, you know, Manchester's arena two nights in a row. Like, you do, but I've been playing drums my whole life. I don't know what that's like. Mm. And you just kind of think, like, well, it's, I don't know, it's just my day. And it's like, okay, but your day is, you know, just like you said, with a heart surgeon, he's like, dude, you get it, man. You crack open the chest, you start, and it's like, whoa, no, I don't.
No, I do not, right? Yeah. Yeah.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
It's crazy.
Crack
mate.
Open the chest. It yeah. Is, so it's yeah. pretty amazing.
It is. It's okay. Cool to just get away.
Speaking of your perspective, you got to experience a new part of your career, technically. I don't know if you can talk about the details, but can you talk at all about what you did last week?
Oh, with Fightstar?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, mate, yeah. So it was pretty cool. So for those listening who don't know, I play for a band called Busted. Here in the UK, they're sort of like a nostalgic, huge, massive band, basically. Yeah.
There's no humble way to say what Busted is. It's like, we yeah. just play arenas.
Yeah. They're like the Backstreet Boys of the UK, basically.
But they play their own instruments.
Exactly. They're like the Backstreet Boys. They're like the Blink of the UK.
There you go. Yeah, I'll go with that.
Yeah, so Charlie, the singer, one of the singers, he has like a heavier project that he used to do back in the day, and they've got a one-off show at Wembley. And Charlie, after me and him sort of did the backing tracks and the MDing side of Busted, everyone has a contribution, but me and Charlie like mainly did the backing tracks. After we did that, he was like, Eddie, do you want to come and give us a hand with these tracks? So I'm helping Fightstar with their backing tracks and whatnot. And I've I put a few ideas down, like a few intros and mid-eights and outros and stuff with the guys. And it was a really cool experience, mate. It was a really unique experience coming into a rehearsal room, never having met the band. I didn't know anyone. All I knew was Charlie. And I had like made the backing track. So I had put like the vocal cues, which basically means that in your in-ears, you will hear a voice that says chorus 1, 2, 3, 4, or whatever it may be. 1, 2, 3, 4, next section. I'd done that. So I assumed they were in the right place. I didn't know or not. And then also just saying like, you're right, guys, I've got this like little idea in the bridge, let's extend it by 8 bars or whatever and do this big build-up section. And that was a unique experience, mate. You know, it was like, you've got to balance the line between, I've just got this cool idea. Hopefully you like it. If not, no worries. But then also being confident enough to say, actually, I think it will work. So like, let's give it a shot. Like if you don't think so, let's just try it, shall we? And it was a very cool experience.
Setting, I mean, you are the only one that's not playing an instrument. So you're really the only one listening to the whole thing.
Yeah.
So even if as Charlie's singing and the drummer's playing, they think like, that chorus is perfect. You can, as basically an audience member, say, honestly, it's going on a bit long. If we trim some fat, you know? So, I mean, that must be tough, or at least it must take a few days worth of rehearsals and them getting to trust like, okay, that's the third idea that Eddie's come up with that we've kept and we've stuck with. I guess we can trust him, you know?
Yeah, exactly, mate. And I think as well, like we talk about it on this podcast, the whole, like throughout every episode, it comes down to just like a bit of confidence and like shutting down that imposter syndrome. It's like, actually, I kind of, these ideas work. We've just done them on the Busted Tour, you know, like I've done them in my old band, and it's just having the confidence to say, you're right, guys, I've got this idea. Let me know what you think and let's give it a spin. And so it was a really unique experience. I've never had that before. Normally it's with my old band, or with Busted, who I play for. I'm not in the band, but I know them well enough to be like, oh, I've got this idea. And they know me well enough to say, I don't know, I just want to keep it the same or whatever. And there's no hard feelings, you know. But this was a unique experience, mate. And one that I wish to get more of in the future, for sure. It was cool. Really enjoyed it.
How was it working with a drummer as a drummer? Like, do you just have to be like careful to not step on toes? Do you have to like massage the ego? I saw him play on like I think Charlie put up a clip. I mean, the dude's a legit player. He can play.
Yeah. I mean, he stood up and weed on his drums and sort of like, you know, just
established dominance.
Yeah. He establishes dominance straight away. And I said, that's cool. You know, weed on his drumsticks and all that. But no, he was a really nice guy, man. I think, cool. Yeah, it's like in those settings, and it's good, what we're going to talk about today, really, for three tips of in the studio. It's like, it's not about an ego at all, really. It's about creating the best show possible. And that leads us on to what we're talking about. It's like the best show possible, making the music the best it can be, and to take ego and kind of those things out of it. But yeah, man, I would love to do a smaller band, and like maybe a band who have never toured before, and help piece their show together and come up with some cool things that make a show cool with them, you know? So it was wicked. Good fun.
Awesome, man. Awesome. Well, let's dive straight into our main topic, three tips. Now, listeners, you pressed play thinking you were getting three tips. Three tips from each of us. That's six tips.
There we go.
Come on.
Let's hope we don't get this. We don't have the same tips here. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I wrote down like seven tips in case all of your tips were that I was like, oh, I was going to say that. So I'll let you go first. Take it away with your first tip. Now, this is for someone that's recording in the studio. And we are thinking of this not as just home studio stuff, even though that absolutely counts, especially in today's day and age. But I'm thinking of it more as like, okay, you're taking your drums to a studio, whether it be local or massive national thing, and there will be a producer, and it's not someone in your band, and they are going to press the space bar and track you recording a song.
Yeah, just felt anxious all of a sudden then after that. Okay, so my first tip, and this was going to be, I was going to say two things in this first one, but I've split them. My first tip is, if you get sent the music, right, then listen and prepare and practice that music until you are sick to death of that song. Because, I mean, if you get sent the tracks, you're lucky. Most of the recordings I've done with people, I have been sent the song maybe one out of every five times. It's rare that you get sent a track, especially if it's for like a big pop guy or girl or whatever.
Sure.
They don't have the time. They just, oh, can you come record? And they're doing a million different sessions at one time. So my first tip is prepare your parts. Like if I get sent a song and let's say I've got a studio session tomorrow and I'm recording this song and I've been sent it today, I will practice three ways of playing it. I will practice let's say the track has drums in it. I will practice it note for note. Learn it note for note over and over and over again. Then the next thing I will practice is keeping that same formula, but there may be a few embellishments. And then I will practice it again with all of my own original ideas, beats and grooves and all those embellishments. So a kind of a copycat version of what you've been sent, a slightly embellished version, and then a crazy version, just so you have different options to give the producer. But my first one is prepare, mate. If you are lucky enough to be sent a track ahead of time, prepare. You have no excuses. Just learn that stuff.
I'm going to delete know the song inside and out. All right. Fantastic.
There we go.
Yeah. I mean, and hopefully we did write down a lot of the same stuff because, you know, it's if we both wrote it down, that just tells you exactly how important it is. And I couldn't agree more. You think you know a song until you're tracking it, and especially punch-ins. That is the one that tells me the person doesn't know the song, where I say, all right, I'm going to back you up to the second chorus. I press the space bar and the person doesn't come in. They're like, I don't know where I am. And I'm like, well, you had two bars like two whole bars. That's a lifetime, you know? And it's like, I don't know where I am. And it's like, okay, I get that. Like, you're not used to jump. You're used to playing this song from front to back. You're not used to jumping in the middle and hearing the lyric that tells you, well, he doesn't say that lyric in the first chorus. This is definitely the second chorus, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
Knowing the song inside, there's no way you can know the song too well. I think that's super important. All right. My first tip is, I have a bunch here, but I want to kind of go opposite of you since yours was really about playing. Learn. This is super important. And all of you can do this at home. Learn how the mics hear your drums rather than how you hear the drums.
Ooh.
You will think your drums sound amazing. The mics are an inch away from the drum head. And if you haven't put your ear where the mics are, you don't know how they're hearing it. And I promise you, like, when the drums sound like almost buttered ass, the mics are like, woo!
Yep.
Wow, that's some good tuning. And so you need to really work on just tracking your 10-inch tom or your 12-inch tom. And just seeing, okay, like what tuning should you have? What heads should you have? Don't do that stuff for the first time when you get to the studio, because inevitably the producer is going to say something like, you know what? That snare is not working for me. They have no emotional attachment to the snare drum that your uncle gave you. They do not care. They just go, that snare is not working for me.
Yeah. Oh, all the tone.
I promised uncle. That. What?
You're like, oh, really? I can't wait to use this cranked 13 by 6.5. Cranked is my vibe. That's when I play the best. And they go, yeah, we're going to have to switch that out. We're going to have to take that down quite a bit. And you go,
did you bring any gels? Gels? Geez. No, I didn't bring any gels. I want to hear the king. It's like, yeah, if you could put your wallet on there and then gaff tape that down and then put gels all around your wallet and then drop the tuning down. Do you have a triple ply head? You don't? Okay. Babe, you still have that pizza box? Yeah, we're going to throw that on. And you're like, whoa, what happened? So don't be married to any of that stuff. Be as flexible as possible. But the most important thing is, I remember thinking like, dude, this sounds amazing. And an engineer came into this was at Ocean Way, which is a massive studio. It was my first like, oh my gosh, Marilyn Manson's recording in the next room over type studio. And I was like, it sounds perfect. And then he literally made me put my ear where the microphone was. I had to lean down and hit the drum. And he's like, that's what we're hearing. And all I heard was, toing, oing, oing, oing. I was like, oh, damn, really? And he's like, yeah, like the mic isn't 6 feet away from your kit as far as the one that's capturing that drum.
Yeah, so you
need to know how the microphones hear your drums versus how you hear the drums. And I remember doing 21 drums with Ash, and he got his drum kit all tuned up. You know, Mark and I were all in the room together. I think Keith Carlock was on that one. We're all tuning our drums, and we are getting them to sound good in the room. And Ash's kit sounded horrible. And I was like, dude, your 10 is looser than Mark's bass drum. Are you going to do anything about that? And he was like, he knows his stuff so well. He was like, well, wait till we track it. And then we went and recorded it. And once we were in the tracking room or in the control room listening back, it was the best sounding drum set out of all four of ours. Because he tuned for the microphones. He tuned for the situation. He knew what compressors they were running, what EQs, what the board was. So the more that you can prep on that side of things and not see post-production as a magic bullet, like, well, no matter how bad it sounds, they'll fix it in the mix. It's like, well, they won't have to fix it in the mix if you just do it right in the beginning. So learn how your mics sound rather than, or learn how your drums sound through the mics rather than through your ears. Your next tip, brother.
It's a great one, mate. I love that. All right. My next one's a bit niche. It's a bit Yoda, but prepare. Oh, here we go. Hang on.
Come on.
If I could talk, prepare to feel unprepared. And that the reason why I say that is because let's say, you've been sent the song and you've been practicing it a certain way, or you've been even practicing it the way they sent it to you. Let's say the track had drums in it. Prepare yourself for the fact that the producer might change their mind in 2 seconds, and that song can completely and utterly change, or the groove pattern may change. I mean, something as simple as an added kick drum
Don't do that. Don't make me delete that one too. You're a dick. Be flexible with your grooves and fills. If they change the groove a little bit, that shouldn't throw you off.
There we go. Boom.
Delete.
There we go. Exactly what I mean, man. It's like you can prepare as much as you think you can, but I think it's one of those situations where you never know what's going to happen in that moment. Like I said, a kick pattern can throw you off massively. So I think you've got to go in like doing all and everything you can, but also go in like a moldable figure where you're just open to being molded or changed and morphed into something else within that moment, within literally like 2 seconds of someone saying, cool, instead of going do da ga dun dun, go dun dun dun. And then you've just got to do it. So it's that feeling of 100%. Being like, oh, I thought I was good. I thought I was good at recording. I thought I prepared. That feeling is definitely going to hit you at one point within that session, for sure.
You have to be flexible. You have to be a chameleon. Whatever, like our goal as hired drummers, especially in a studio situation, is to say, yeah, no problem. Hey, is there any way you can? Yep, no problem. Gotcha.
Yeah.
But then you have to do it right away. And so I think, like you said, like if I had a groove that I knew, like, all right, this is the groove, I would do it with multiple variations of bass drums. I would try different hi-hat patterns. The other thing that I think you've had to do this before, but be prepared for the something like, just like Eddie said, be prepared to feel unprepared. They might go, that groove is perfect, but we're getting way too much hi-hat bleed. Can you just do kick and snare and then we'll track hi-hat separately?
Yeah.
And you're like, no, I can only play this thing if it's all my limbs together. I don't know how to play just that part. I don't even know what the hi-hat's doing, you know? And then it's like, okay, well, they want to track this thing separately.
Yeah.
And that's a weird thing, man.
Yeah. It's like I said, you're going in thinking I've nailed the groove, and then they throw that at you and you're like, oh my God. Or have you got the hi-hat thing going? And what they mean by that is, have you got your left foot going up and down when you're on the ride cymbal playing as lightly as possible? Like little things like that. It's just like being on that game show. In the UK, it's called Takeshi's Castle. Have you got that in the States?
No. It's like, I think maybe we got it for a little bit, like on Netflix or something.
So it's like an outside, what do you call it? Basically, you have to go up a slide and then you have to go over the water whilst things are being thrown at you, and you've got to complete the course, basically, with all these distractions and not fall into the river of mud or whatever. It's kind of like that session. It's literally like, I can see the end. I've just got to get through all these like curveballs, things being thrown at me. So you've got to be moldable for sure.
Yeah, I think that's super important. All right, next one I have is, now this is different for everybody, but I'm assuming you've never done this before. I know what it's like to want to hear your drums. I totally get it. But change the ratio. Turn your drums down and turn the click up. As soon as the first note of that song starts, no matter how loud you thought that click was, it is going to drop in your headphones immediately. And you're going to, like, basically when the click comes in, it should kind of scare you. It should be that loud, because as soon as you start bashing, it's going to just fade away. And a lot of times when we're tracking students here during camps, they'll play and they're kind of struggling to stay on time and they're rushing and they're dragging. And then I'll go out to the kit and I'll put in my in-ears, and that gives me a chance to hear their mix, because they get to control their mix between click and drums. And I'm like, oh my God, you had the drums cranked. I can't even hear the click over this, you know? So bring those drums down enough that you can hear them. They don't have to be quiet, because then you're going to feel detached from the kit. But bring the drums down a little bit, bring that click up in the mix, or have the producer do that for you, so that it's really, really present. And if you need it, ask the producer, can you make those eighth notes? If I'm playing something around 70, I don't want a quarter note. I want boop, 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 boom.
Yeah.
Gah, boom. So don't feel embarrassed to ask the producer, can you make that an eighth note click? Because the space is just too much for me. It's like, that's totally fine. That would be my suggestion. Turn the drums down just a little bit, turn that click up.
Yeah, I love that, mate. I think, having the confidence to say, actually, this is going to work for me better in order to get a better drum take. Then my friend who now plays in Slipknot, so a guy called V-Man, right, who used to be the guitar tech for my old band and a mutual friend of Charlie's from Busted, used to guitar tech for Fightstar back in the day. He now plays bass in Slipknot, right?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, crazy. Like, that's a whole nother story for a different podcast. But I actually stumbled across a video on YouTube of him talking about how he got the gig. And he in the rehearsal, he like delayed the rehearsal time or something like this. Delayed the playing because he wanted like this specific gear. So he told the guitar techs and stuff to go get him this specific amp he wanted with this head. And he delayed the practice so he could get the gear he wanted, because he knew it would sound good and he would play better. And the band would like be like, flipping out, this is incredible. So yeah, totally. It's a good example of like, just whatever works for you, just have the confidence to say it. Because in the moment you feel like they're going to think, oh, he's being fussy, but they're not. They're just going to go, yeah, here you go, mate.
Cool. Honestly, yeah, the producer couldn't care less about anything other than the final project. That is all they're caring about. Well, that and money. You know, if it's on a label, then there is a budget and time is money. But so the quicker they can get you to do what they need you to do, the happier they're going to be. But it's all in our heads that they're going, I was going to have this guy do the next Jessica Simpson track, the next Slipknot album, but it's like, they're not, they literally are focused at the task at hand. Like I can't imagine you did that thing with the producer from Muse, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't imagine that at any point while he was working with you, he was like, I should talk to the band about kicking out our drummer. Eddie's killing it. Like, it's not an audition. Exactly. You're not auditioning for something else. You're in the moment, do the job. And so, yeah, if it just means asking for an eighth note click, or, hey, that click is, you know, sometimes that, that Pro Tools click is a little harsh. If I'm playing a ballad, I don't know if I want that. Like, do you guys have a tambourine? They do, by the way. They get to choose the sound that's coming down the pipe, like into your headphones. So just say, do you have anything softer, like maybe a tambourine? Can we, you know, or maybe you come in and say, look, I've built this rhythm track with this 16th note shaker and this thing. It's at the tempo. Like, can we put this in there? It just helps me get into the vibe better. Like, all right, go for it. Yeah. Next one, buddy.
Oh, mate, we could go for days on this. I was just trying to like prioritize the next one in my head. This one's going to be a bit niche because it kind of depends on the music you're recording, obviously, but singles, mate. I can't stress how most of the time, 99.9% of the feels that I've recorded on any song that hasn't been like, you know, like a punk rock song or a really hard rock metal song, they've all been singles. Every single feel has just been right, left, right, left, right, left. And it's choices. So I guess my last tip would be, in the moment when you're like, oh my God, what feel do I play here? What can I possibly come up with? Just remember right, left, right, left. And then the sort of other tip to go with this is just think musical. Think musical choices and combinations within singles. And I promise you that would get you out of a lot of sticky situations where you don't know what to play. Because like I said, man, most of the things I've recorded have just been right, left, right, left. The occasional kick maybe in there, the occasional hurter or whatever you want to call it. Like, but the principle, the foundations of everything has been ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga.
Totally.
So simple.
And they can, if you do that, they can always ask for more. I always say that it's a compliment if somebody asks you for more, and it's an insult if they ask you for less. So, or it feels like it. When a producer says, hey, is there any way you could just do way less than what you're doing? At no point are you like, oh, hell yeah, I can. You know, you're like, yeah, all right. So you don't like me. You don't even like my clothing. Okay, you hate me. Fine. Yeah, where when they say like, dude, I'm digging it. Do you have a little spice in the tank? You feel like, do I? Bro,
so true.
I got 2,000 Instagram videos in my back catalog ready to go. Look, I got what you need.
I've been waiting my whole life for you to tell me that. You know what I mean?
Do I have more?
Yeah, let's go. It's true though, man. I mean, like, yeah, when I think back to it, whenever I've like pulled out, let's say you're doing the crazy take, the take number three, where you've got the you've got the solid take, you've got a few more combinations that, you know, they might use. And you've got more time. So you go, you know what? I'm going to do a crazy take. I'm going to do a drum clinic take. They're never using any of that stuff, really. There might be a little bit of magic within there. But when you're banging out a paradiddle-diddle and a linear chop, it's like, mate. Like I said, it obviously comes down to the music recording. If you're listening to this and you play in a tech metal band, then yeah, crack
or
on.
Or a fusion band. Yeah, but, go for it.
Yeah, go for it. But it's, all the things I've recorded, it's basically lived within singles. Which is kind of nice, man. It's kind of nice to know that. It's like, mate, just think, you know, right, left, that will get you out of trouble.
Yeah, yeah. Just play simple, play for the song. If you can accentuate something in the song so that what you're playing is tied to the music rather than just the drummer took a little break and then came back to the song, that's great. All right, my final one. This is more about like, how do you know you're ready? And this is just one of the thousands of ways you could check. It doesn't mean that all session drummers do this by any means, but one way to know if you are kind of in a good place to head into the studio is, now this is assuming you're in a band and you already know what songs you're recording, not doing the show up and the producer is just going to say, all right, we're going to do these vibes. Can you play the song from start to finish without the song? Can you just count yourself in with the click and play intro, first verse, first chorus, second verse, the whole thing? Do you know the arrangement that well that you could play it without the music and you're singing it in your head the whole time? And if not, and especially if this is your own band, you have more work to do on memorizing that song, because there is a good chance, even though my band, when we did our first major label album, they were all present. I was not, just like you said earlier, Eddie, be prepared to not feel prepared. I was not ready for them to just lay down a bass scratch track and then send me out on the kit. Oh, and I was like, God, whoa, yeah. I cue off the vocals, I cue off the guitar. And they were like, dude, you're fine. You got this. I'm like, I'm 20. I don't have this. Dang. I don't even want to be here right now. You know, I want to teach for a living, right? This is scaring me. I don't even like this situation at all.
Scratch tracks, mate. They honestly, I don't think they really exist anymore because like demoing, the production has become so good. People can just mute the MIDI drum track now and go, here you go, you've got the full song to record to, which is super interesting because, yeah, I remember those, man, a scratch track. All right, just a quick riff so you know where you are. Well, no, I don't know where I am.
We'll do some scratch vocals and the singer just comes in and he's like, I'm singing the chorus. It's the verse. And I'm like, what?
Real vibey, guys. Nice way for me to catch a vibe here.
I need a little more than that. And they're like, oh, we need you to really dig in. I'm like, well, this song was about our youth and our childhood, and now there's no lyrics, so I can't feel it. So anyways, yeah, I think just being able to sit down and play the song without the song, then you know, like, all right, I'm in a good place. I know the song by heart. Like I said earlier, can you start? If I just said, all right, from the bridge, two, three, Foe, I know what the bridge groove is. I know exactly what's happening. Because I'm not saying you have to do this to be able to track. What I'm saying is if you do have it down this well, there's just less minefields for you to walk through. There's less things to throw you off your game because inevitably something's going to throw you off your game. I'm sure you've been through this before, Eddie, but you come in with your full gear and before you even set up, the producer's like, oh, we have a kit here. It's the one we like to track with. Mm-hmm. And then they wheel out this like 1962 Rogers thing. And I'm like, okay, that's nothing like what I play.
Oh, I used to get a lot when I had two up, one down. I used to have your cymbals are quite close to your toms. Yeah, they are.
Is that a problem?
What do you mean by that? You know, it would be good to have a little bit more space between the shells and the drums.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Let me get Alan in here. Alan, you want? Can we deal with this? Like, what do you mean? Can you do? You do this every day.
Meanwhile, you're standing there like a nervous wreck, sweating.
Totally. Just and then like, Alan comes in and he's like, "Oh God, I've never seen. Wow. Do you always play like this?
Yeah.
Yeah, Alan.
Is that normal? Dude,
I copied this configuration out of Modern Drummer magazine. This is how the pros do it.
Exactly. Yeah, what are those? Zildjian A Customs. A's.
Oh.
Actually, mate, if we could chuck in one last tip, my tip would be prioritize good cymbals over good drums. That is my thing. A quick story. Where are we? 36 minutes. We've got time.
You've got time.
A quick story. Have you heard of BBC May Devel?
So what?
So the BBC here in the UK, radio station, TV channel, right?
Oh yeah, I know BBC.
Yeah, but... so Maid de Vale is like a famous studio where they do things called like live lounges and it's a famous studio owned by the BBC really. And Radio 1 used to use it a lot back in the day.
Oh, okay.
And Zane Lowe, who now does Apple Music, the presenter, he had LTA, my old band, come in and do a session. And this was like a first time in Maid de Vale. Big famous studio, Elton John's recorded in here, Led Zeppelin, like it's like the Abbey Road of like music, TV and radio, if that makes sense.
Okay. Yeah, for sure.
And we're set up, we're ready to go. I've got like this terrible drum kit, terrible cymbals. We start to play and then the engineer at May de Vale stops and says, cool, that's enough guys. He comes in the room, starts moving a few drum marks around. Everyone's quiet as a mouse because we're all nervous. And he goes,
sure.
Those hi-hats. And I go, yeah. And he goes, they might just be the worst sounding hi-hats I've ever heard. and I went like, yeah, huh. I don't even remember what brand they were. They weren't like Zildjian or Minor or anything. They were just like non-branded, probably half cracked because we were just a punk rock band.
Totally.
And I remember thinking like, oh, you dick, mate. Like, we haven't even recorded yet. Now you've got my band in their own head that we sound awful thanks to my hi-hats.
All my hi-hats' fault.
And as we got bigger as a band and as like I got endorsed by Zildjian and stuff, every time we used to come back, I used to say, I brought those hi-hats back for you, mate, just in case you remember. And he actually turned out to be a really, really funny, lovely guy and an amazing guy at his job. But yeah, it was just so funny, man. I was like, oh my God. Bad cymbals.
I've ruined the whole thing. Yeah.
Are way worse than bad drums. Way worse.
I totally. Well, yeah, because you're going to take the greatest drums in the world with all the independent sustain systems and all the tone. And the first thing they're going to do is be like, can you calm those down a bit? They're going to put gels on them. They're going to put tape on it. They're going to be like, whoa. And then they're going to make your, I don't know, $8,000 DW kit sound like a CB700 with pinstripes. And they're going to be like, yes. Yes. Do you have two pillows in the kick? Get a third. And I'm like, well, I don't, it's a $3,000 bass drum. I'd like to hear some of it. And they're like, well, it doesn't even matter. We're going to replace it. We just need you to calm those things down so we can replace them without all the bleed. And I'm like, okay.
True.
Okay.
It's so, so true, man.
But the cymbals are going to cut through everything. So I totally agree with you.
Yeah. It's so funny, man. It's like getting a Ferrari and pulling up and someone saying, yeah, cool. We're just going to mute the exhaust. We are going to change the engine. And then we are going to change the
Do you mind if we spray paint it gray? I'm sorry. What did you just say? This is Rosso Corso red, baby. Yeah, we're gonna spray paint that matte gray, and it is one of those. But I do totally agree. Like the hi hats, the ride, the crashes. You know, that's going to be much tougher to replace. So if you can get great sounding cymbals, go for it. Decent drums. Honestly, I don't even know that the drums matter as much as your ability to tune your drums. Bonus tip 96 from Eddie and me. Learn how to tune. Learn what these heads do. Oh, that was fun, dude. That was a 40-minute banger.
I mean, that was a 40-minute banger. I mean, I had to really hold myself back from going and... You know what I mean? That was a
great next week we're going to do another one for private drum teachers and just three tips for teaching a student and how to make that the best experience possible, both for you and your students. And that will obviously extend into any other kind of teaching you're doing. But I'm not wrapping it up.
Nah.
Join the practice project.
Oh, yeah.
Join the practice project because, dude, I put a little video up there today and I think it's important for people to see like, okay, you only see what we choose to show you, which is the finished product. You don't see the 10 and everyone thinks like, oh, I know everyone makes mistakes, but in the practice project videos, it's like Eddie and I made a commitment to ourselves. We weren't going to use our cameras. We weren't going to use microphones. We were just going to use our phones. And once you press record, it is what it is. There's no second takes. And man, I put up a jazz one thing that I'm practicing right now. Oh my God. Literally. Just nickname me the butcher because I butchered that stuff, bro. It is bad.
Right. I swear it does a lot of positive for the old mental, I think, this whole thing of like knowing you're recording. Firstly, you're practicing, so you feel good for it. But then knowing you're recording and others are going to see it and you've mucked up.
Yeah.
And you could just start the video again and no one would know. But like, it's actually, I don't know, mate, it's building a very good relationship with learning and also just making video content. I'm finding I'm getting loads of benefits from it.
Totally. Well, I hope, and it's been awesome to just hear what the other, practice project members, what they're working on, what they're putting their time into. And I got to say, it also kind of kicks us in the butt because they seem to be practicing a lot more than we are.
Yeah, I know. Some
like
of them
everyone's got in another 2 hours today. I'm like, you did? Oh. Jesus. I was stoked on my 30 minutes. I was pumped.
I'm going to have a little practice after this, I think, mate. And just like...
Nice.
Yeah. I mean, nice. I'm getting there. I'm slowly chipping away at the singles between the hands and the foot. It's so hard, mate. Why did I pick that to practice? Why? Why?
Because it's good for you. Because it's your vegetables.
I saw a Travis Barker video as well. Yeah. I saw Travis Barker eating vegetables. That was it.
That's all you need. Well, if you guys want to become part of the practice project, the link is in the description below. It also helps support this podcast, but it is something beneficial that you cannot get without being a member. So we would really appreciate if you'd be a part of it. But for now, episode 157 is in the can.
Boom. See you next week, people.